for this March 22nd, 2022 meeting of the Pacifica National Finance Committee. We believe we have a quorum. I'm going to ask our secretary, R. Paul Martin, to take the roll.
Okay, please answer up when you hear your name. Nick Arena, Chris Corey, Elizabeth Von
Here.
Gunton. Wait, Chris Corey, are you there?
I am. I just arrived. Thank you.
Okay. Elizabeth Von Gunton.
Here.
Julie Hewitt.
Here.
Jim Kaufman.
Here.
Julia Kennard.
Here.
R. Paul Martin here. James McFadden.
Here.
Sean Kelly McPherson.
Still here.
James Sagerton.
Here.
Susan Young.
Here.
Okay, that's 10.
R. Paul, thank you very much. I have a question for you. I know that the Finance Committee's membership is set in the bylaws. So I don't believe we go by the usual rule for committees where if you miss so many meetings, you're out. That doesn't apply here, or does it? I don't see how it could.
It can't. Of course it can't. I will also say this. It doesn't apply anywhere to any of the PNB committees, as per a motion passed by the PNB years ago. But who pays attention to that?
Well, if it was available where we could look at it, we might pay more attention to it, but I appreciate that institutional knowledge.
Well, I can look that up too, I suppose.
You don't need to, of course. We'll take that at face value. Okay. So we did the roll call. Thank you, R. Paul. Now we go to adopting the agenda. I'm going to read the agenda prior to discussing. Number one is convene the meeting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Number two is roll call. Number three is adopt agenda. Number four, chair's announcements, 2 minutes. Number five, minutes, 3 minutes. Number six, review KPFT fiscal year 22 budget. General Manager Robert Franklin and Business Manager Markeisha Vincent Sampson presenting, 70 minutes. Number seven, motion updating Pacifica transaction limits, 15 minutes. Eight, budget timelines and schedule for NFC review of budgets for fiscal year 22. Oh, I still put Texas budget in there. Please correct that, R. Paul. And number nine, adjourn no later than 10:15 p.m. Eastern Time. Okay, is there any discussion or any suggested changes to the agenda? Is there any objection to the agenda? Hearing none, we'll consider the agenda adopted. That brings us to the chair's announcements. Very briefly, tonight we will review the KPFT fiscal year 22 draft budget, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting grant applications will soon be open. Pacifica's position for applying is under review. Those are the announcements for tonight, and now we go to the minutes. R. Paul, I understand we have minutes.
Yes, we do. Okay. I move that we approve the minutes of the March 8th, 2022 NFC meeting.
Very good. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, this is McFadden. I just wanted to say I was happy to see minutes that were pretty detailed. So I just I was impressed.
R. Paul is a worker, that's for sure. That's a regular thing. We thank him. And thank you for that comment. Anything else on the minutes? Is there any objection to approving these minutes? Hearing none, they're approved with the usual proviso that they are subject to correction at any time in the future. Okay, we go now to number six, review the KPFT fiscal year 22 budget. We have General Manager Robert Franklin and Business Manager Markeisha Vincent Sampson presenting. We have 70 minutes for this item. And I guess we'll go to Robert Franklin, the general manager, first for opening remarks. Robert, the floor is yours.
Thank you very, very much, and a pleasant good evening to everyone. Hope everyone had a good day. A couple of points I'd like to make. We certainly find ourselves in challenging times here at KPFT, but certainly positive opportunities all abound. Along those lines, we know that our budget is not the strongest, but we're making steps to shore it up on many fronts. Firstly, we are aggressively seeking external grant funding. We're happy to hear certainly that there might be a possibility to resurrect the CPB, Corporation for Public Broadcasting Funding, because for many years the station reliably secured those particular dollars to help augment programming and other needs of the station. In the external grant initiative, we have been in negotiation with the foundation that might be willing to help us with our signal expansion initiative, as well as perhaps new equipment. Those discussions have been going on ongoing for the last 3 to 4 months. We are going to initiate aggressive micro events. These are events generating hopefully significant funding on with small events throughout the next coming months. We have currently on the docket Amy Goodman, who will be doing a fundraiser next month for us. We plan to have other such Zoom fundraisers coming forward. We have not, over the number of years, done any underwriting of community underwriting. We seek to initiate underwriting so that we might be able to augment what we get on air. Right presently, we primarily do a fundraiser that is the source of our funding, major funding. So we hope to augment initiative to do more underwriting. And the other initiative that we have been under discussion with is a community-sponsored events, preferably with a professor at the University of Houston. We are going to hopefully do a series of screenings once we find a large sponsor. The film that's actually a clip resides on our webpage. It's a film of the late Houston Congressman, Texas Congressman Mickey Leland. I've been in discussions with his wife, who will be working with me to hopefully find a sponsor that will allow us to do some major screenings throughout the area. But those are just some initiatives that we have undertaken to help us to augment our budget shortfall.
Are you done, Robert?
Yes, I am.
Thank you very much for that. Now, I'd like to, I don't know if it's fair to open up to questions to Robert before we dive into the budget, so we have more to go on. Does anyone have, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask if anyone has any questions based on what Robert said, not the details of the budget. Go ahead, Kim.
I just have a quick question, which I would like to keep in mind before we go into the budget. How many, I think I counted like maybe, well, I don't know, how many fund drive days do you, is you in your budget for this year?
We've had.
No, the budget. Okay, excuse me, sorry.
Sorry, Kim, do you want to restate that question?
How many fund drive days are in the budget for this year? I know you've already had some, well, about half the year.
Kim, I'm going to interrupt you just for a second and say that I think I didn't want to get into the details of the budget in this section. I just want to take questions based on what he just said.
Okay,
and we'll
all
get
right,
into
fine.
Specifics about that kind of thing when we present the budget itself, if that's okay.
Yep.
Anybody else with any questions?
R. Paul?
Go ahead, R. Paul.
Yes, you mentioned underwriting. This has been an issue in Pacifica for a while, and I believe it would require the PNB to pass on that, and that there needs to be basically guidelines for how this would go, and it would need approval because stations have been told they can't do this in the past. So are you anticipating that the PNB is going to pass a comprehensive motion regarding underwriting?
I'm forever hopeful. I do know that that is a stream of revenue that our station could surely use. And in terms of not being able to do that, and with the absence of the CPB grants that have traditionally helped to augment the funding of the station, I think underwriting certainly in a very basic way is something that is certainly needed. And I can't really see a need why that would not be the case. I know that based upon the history that some have shared with me as to the reticence for having underwriting is that underwriters would somehow dictate programming and so forth. I would respectfully say that, you know, there's language that can be put into underwriting contracts to stipulate to potential underwriters that they have their support does not in any way, shape, form, or fashion influence, you know, programming. So that I think is a useful step in terms of getting underwriting a part of our revenue generating opportunities here at the station.
This is the chair. I'm going to put myself on the stack, but I'm going to ask first, Robert, were you done?
Yes, I'm done.
Okay. R. Paul, did you have any further follow up or any other questions?
Yeah, I would simply say that, you know, human nature, who pays the piper calls the tune, has been something we've been worried about in Pacifica for many years. And I'll also note that that kind of provision is exactly what happens with all of the commercial radio stations and other stations. And yet, of course, we know that advertisers have influence over all of those media. So I certainly hope that nobody does anything until the PNB reaches some sort of decision on this one way or the other.
Well, Paul, do you have a question for Dr. Franklin?
A new one?
I didn't know. I didn't hear a question in your last statement. I just wondered if there was a question there.
No, I was just clarifying something.
Understood. Dr. Franklin, I heard you try to respond before I jumped in. I apologize. Did you have something you wanted to say?
I was just going to say, with respect, all of the many stations, community and public radio stations that I have managed over my career, and we've secured many, many underwriters, sponsors, and all those stations. And none of the sponsors, underwriters have ever tried to influence any, well, I've not been influenced by any underwriters or sponsors with respect to music or programming.
Thank you. I have put myself on the stack, but is there anybody else who'd like to ask Dr. Franklin a question first?
This is Kim, just in reference to his last statement that you haven't had any problems with your music programming. I think most of us are more concerned with the public affairs influence.
I don't have
to respond to it, this question now, but I think that's the overriding concern of about underwriting with most of us.
So would you like me to answer that?
I'm sorry. I should have asked you. I was about to ask you if you did want to respond.
I think again, payola is certainly something that's forbidden by FCC rules and regulations. If that was the thrust or the focus of that particular comment question, I would say that the public affairs or music, I've not in my tenure as manager in a number of stations that I've had, that I've overseen, have had any such problems. And if there was even a hint of such a problem, you know, those situations were always taken care of immediately. But for the most part, no major issues along those lines during my tenure at all my other stations, just for the record. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other question for Dr. Franklin? All right, I'll put myself on the stack for now and see if anybody comes up with anything. Dr. Franklin, I want to ask you a specific question about underwriting, and that is, do you understand that it's, I'm going to say, a sensitive issue rather than say it's kind of the third rail of Pacifica politics, but it's a sensitive issue. We have had some stations venture into what seems like underwriting, but I think the thrust of some of the questions here is that do you understand that if you were to embark on underwriting, that's something that you should bring to the Pacifica National Board for a review before you do it? Is it fair to say you understand that?
Perfectly crystal clear.
Wonderful. I appreciate that. Are there any other questions for Dr. Franklin based on his initial statements? We'll have, you know, we can ask him further questions later to the extent that he stays with us. I know he said he had other commitments tonight, so I hope he'll stay with us as long as he can, but he may have to leave early, which is why we put items concerning guests first in our agenda. Are there any other questions now based on Dr. Franklin's introduction? Hearing none. We'll go now to Markeisha Vincent Sampson and ask her for a brief introduction to the budget, which she worked on with Dr. Franklin before presenting to the NFC. Actually, Dr. Franklin was not here when this budget was prepared. It was David Bays, the former GM, and we got this budget back in September, I think, of last year. Markeisha, do you have an introduction for us?
Sure. So as most of you will see, our budget is yeah, our revenue, our listener support overall has been down drastically. We are operating currently the best way we can with the limited finances that we have. We are looking to new fundraising opportunities as we see fit. But in regards to the revenue, everyone knows that all the stations have been taking a hit. And we, of course, have experienced it probably even more so than others because we remain not broadcasting live. So we suffer because of that. In response to the individual's question about the number of days that we've been in Fund Drive so far, since we have been broadcasting remotely, typically when we go into drive now, we go into drive for a full month at a time, which in essence, and since we're doing it about four times a year, I guess that's 120 days a year, which is, I know, considerably high compared to what we did prior to not broadcasting remotely, which was about 77 to 80 days a year. So as you can see, why we're broadcasting, since we're not broadcasting live, the need for us to be on the air longer to try to raise the funds has been, is what we've been doing. I want to also talk to you specifically about why, in addition to why we're in the red, and it's our central services amount that currently is running at about a third of our revenue. And know that most of you should know that that number is based on a formula that was created about 6 or 7 years ago, maybe longer. And, of course, it was based on higher revenue numbers. And we've been still been expected to pay those higher numbers even though our revenue has suffered. So with our revenue being down, it overall under half a million dollars, $490,000. Our expenses are just over that, about $521,000. But then you add on $161,000, $162,000 for central services, and that definitely puts us almost $200,000 in the red. Most of our expenses, if not all, have been cut, which we've never had a fat budget, for lack of a better word. KPFT has always operated on a very minimal budget. We have no bells and whistles. We just would have the basics of lights, water, gas, just the basics, no extra training, no fringe benefits, just no extras, for lack of a better word. But if you want to ask me about a specific line item, I'd be happy to answer that. That's all I have for right now.
Thank you, Markeisha. That's very much appreciated. Why don't we ask if there's any questions based on what Markeisha has said, not the details of the budget just yet.
Yes, James. This is Chris.
Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Okay, I wanted to point out that we did actually revise the central services formula, and that it was based on a 15% of revenue look back. And the last time we had a look at this, I don't have a date on this spreadsheet right now, but it was less than what you're showing. But of course, revenues have dropped off considerably with KPFT since then. And then we have the whole business of how we account for the for the PPP funding, which, you know, makes your books look a little prettier, but ruins your central services formula because it counts as revenue. I know that we need to revisit this again, but 15% of revenue for you guys would be about half of what you're paying right now. So I suspect that number is going to go down significantly once we get into this subject again. I just wanted to point that out to you. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. I'm going to take a moment now just to respond to what Chris had said. That's exactly right. We did pass a revised central services formula. As far as I know, it wasn't implemented. It's a little hard to tell because so many stations weren't paying central services. But I think we will revisit that question. I must say that I'm a little bit reluctant to ask Julia to go back 10 years and recalculate central services. I think we had one formula 10 years ago. About 6 years ago, the formula was changed, and then last year we changed it again. But so it's not as critical, for example, as getting the audits done. It's not as critical as the application for the CPP funding. It's more significant in the long-term look at what, you know, given stations have contributed or may owe in terms of their central services. But we probably should revisit that, especially, you know, going back when it is putting an undue burden on certain stations whose revenue has decreased. In fact, that was one of the reasons we wanted to do that last year, is to address the issue of stations who'd had marked decreases in revenue, and we're still paying central services at the old rate. So, yes, we do have to go back to that. Thank you, Chris. Is there any other comment on that or any other question for Markeisha based on her introduction?
I'd like to make one comment.
Go ahead, Julia.
Just keep in mind that we've already closed the books prior to fiscal year 21.
Yes.
So audited everything through 2020. So there's not going back multiple years.
Well, I do understand that's an issue, and I should have spoken to you about this prior to the meeting. But what I was thinking is maybe we could address that and then put a note in the books indicating the adjustment to the central services. Would that be possible?
We can talk about it later.
Yeah, let's do that. I agree. That's appropriate. Okay. Any other questions for Markeisha? Any other comments?
Yes, this is McFadden.
Go ahead.
I guess I wanted to try to get it understood. When I looked down the listener support, and it looked to me like when you're not in a fund drive, you also get a significant listener support. And I'm kind of wondering if there's significant listener support outside of fund drives, whether small tweaks could, you know, boost that up if things like that have been tried. And since I don't know anything about that kind of revenue generation, maybe somebody else does, but I've often wondered, you know, not using a fund drive, but just reminding listeners that the shows, you know, need support, or maybe that's already happening and that's what's generating it. But to get a sort of a more steady
being. Is that a question for Markeisha, Mac, or is that?
It's a question for her, but also just maybe a general question. Just, you know, since there's often.
Why don't we give her a chance to comment if she wishes, and then we'll see if anybody else wants to say anything. Markeisha, do you have any comment on that?
Sure. So even when we're not in an active fund drive, we do remind our programmers to constantly, we always try to say that we're in a quiet drive where people are gently nudging their listeners. Remember, your donation is what keeps us on the air. So we are always encouraging that. So that could be part of the bump, as well as we do renewal mailings and stuff like that, all kind of added gifts. We do mailings throughout the year as well to kind of keep the funds to trickling in.
If I could interject.
Yeah, who was that?
Dr. Frank.
Go ahead, please.
One of the things that I was mentioning, these micro events, they would be those types of events that would be kind of in between those membership. They would be ongoing. They would be small events that would be out in the public. Events that would be generating revenue that would be going toward, you know, our budget, also eliciting, you know, in real time but listeners and listener support. So those micro events are built in to help us to have a steady stream of revenue coming in year round.
I'm going to put myself on the stack. Is there anybody else with a question? Hearing none at the moment, I'm going to ask Dr. Franklin, have there been any such events so far, and how did they do, if so? And I understand that this is like a kind of a separate sub-question. I understand you don't have a studio, you don't have a building, you're doing remote broadcasting. It's difficult under these circumstances to do normal fundraising, but have you been able to do any micro events, or I guess that's a specific question. I guess I want to ask you generally, how are you doing with coping with the difficult circumstances?
Well, regarding your first point, we do have a micro event scheduled. I mentioned earlier with Amy Goodman, it's going to be a Zoom, and that'll be a micro event that we hope to get plus 200, 300 people to Zoom in and hear her talk on a specific topic. We confirmed that as of today. In terms of coping, just with the situation, we have attempted to be creative. We have spoken with a vendor in our community that will allow us to use her particular establishment to hold another such micro event that would where we would be able to bring a small group of people in for a price, and then we would also stream that on our webpage for a price. It would be perhaps maybe one of our local programmers would be doing perhaps maybe blues or bluegrass, and then we would charge a cover fee. The community business has allowed us to keep whatever we get at the door, 100% of what we get at the door, and we anticipate if we are able to do one such event, we could probably bring in about, if we got a capacity of 60 people, $1,210 per week for 4 weeks for 12 months, we figured that we could probably bring in like $59,000 in terms of money outside of the regular membership on air membership drive. So those are the type of little micro events that once we get them started, we anticipate them bringing in dollars during these quiet times when we're not otherwise asking for money on the air.
If I could just do a quick follow-up, in New York, up until very recently, we've had restrictions from COVID about people going into buildings and such. I believe in Texas, you don't have such restrictions. And I guess barring a renewed or a new outbreak of a variant of COVID, that those you're basically anticipating that that won't happen, so that you can go ahead and do those things.
We scoped out the facility in advance, and we figured even with social distancing, we could probably get at a minimum, perhaps maybe 55 people in there, socially distanced. So there are some restrictions in some establishments. I think, though, in this particular establishment, even with social distancing, we would still be able to do the event safely.
Understood. Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Kim?
Go ahead, Kim.
I don't see anything on this budget, and maybe it's being handled another way, but what's going on with your building, a new building, and is there a separate fund for that, or what?
Kim, I'm going to interject, and before you answer, just say that I sort of violated my own rule. I was asking people to ask questions based on what was said so far, but I think now it's appropriate that we move ahead into the actual budget itself, and I'm overruling myself, I guess, and saying that now it's open season on the budget itself, and so therefore Kim's question and my previous question would be in order. Go ahead and answer it, anyone, whoever would like.
The point is, it's not on the budget.
It's Julia. Mark, I don't mean to step on it. I'm happy to
go ahead, Julia. Go ahead.
I heard Julia. Go ahead, Julia.
Was that you, Markeisha?
Yes, and I was just saying, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Kim, just so you know, and I haven't even talked to Markeisha about this yet, but that is a different set of funds that was set aside from the sale of their original building. And I started a very, very rough, when I say rough, it's more of just an outline of, you know, here are the funds, here are some cost estimates that we think, oh, if we pay this for the building, if we set aside this for upfit, you know, if what are the things that we're not thinking about, legal fees, security systems, things like that, so we can have a centralized capital budget for that, but that is a separate budget. It'll be a capital budget.
And
it's rough. I'll send it to you, but it was just sort of a template to get us going to make sure that we don't have people from different areas going out and spending money without everyone really understanding, you know, we don't want to run out of money in the middle of what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
With the funds that they do have set aside.
I just didn't want there to be any surprises, like in a couple of months, oh, look, this didn't go on the budget. You know, it's not non-budgeted expense. It's another fund. So I'm fine. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we should hold this conversation about the real estate situation just in case we, you know, should slip into proprietary matters.
It's a valid question.
Yeah. Oh no. I think it was, but I don't want to go too much further into it because, you know, we are involved in a search for a building and we don't want to.
Nobody's going into it. We're done. Let's move on.
Excuse me, Kim.
I'm sorry.
You did not go into it. I agree. I just didn't want to go too much further into it, so we don't do that. Okay. Julia, having heard your sweet voice for the first time, more or less, in this meeting, I want to ask you if you have any introductory remarks on this budget, which I know you were highly involved in and working very hard with Markeisha on to bring it to fruition. Do you have any opening statements you want to make or remarks?
I think my remarks are not very specific. They're really more about we have to help KPFT be in the situation to generate revenue. And right now, I agree. I think they have some things holding them back. They've been without a building for a while. We know that. That's not necessarily going to be an immediate cure-all for that. But just the fact that it's so disjointed, they haven't been able to settle anything with being able to broadcast live in a quality way. From what I understand, I think that has had an impact. This budget is not pretty, but it's also, I think, more realistic than, we might have seen from the original draft. It is updated with, some of the actual, especially with the revenue, and some adjustments were made to specifically May. I believe in prior years there has been the ability to, in fund drives, to have significantly higher fund drive numbers. But, Markeisha ratcheted that down to what I think is a much more achievable than was there before. I mean, it is what it is. It's just like with the other areas that we have a deficit budget. There's a specific plan has got to be put in place and some support given to help them meet these goals.
I appreciate that, and I want to ask you specifically, as you've mentioned, with other deficit budgets, we've had plans to increase revenue, which will have to be implemented and realized. Do you think that this budget has included enough or included as much as is currently in shape to be included of revenue enhancement in this budget?
I would say so.
I mean, realistically, yeah. I'm not asking, did they do everything possible under the sun, but realistically speaking, in terms of the current circumstances, have they considered and thought about and implemented what needs to be done in order to improve the revenue?
I can't speak to what's been implemented to generate the revenue. It sounds like they have some great ideas. Of course,
that's what I mean.
COVID,
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Right. They at least have some ideas, and they're talking about moving that forward. Looking back at the actual revenue. If I would look at the correct one, I keep looking at the wrong one. Hold on.
While you're looking for that, Julia, I want to say I think we're now going to go into looking at the actual budget itself. So if everybody could go to the budget and get that open, I'm hoping maybe some people have already done that, but the budget was sent. I'm having a little trouble with my computer. I can't see exactly when it was sent, but...
Well, I think most people have it open.
It was sent just...
If they don't.
Yeah. Is there anybody who needs time to open the budget? Go ahead, Julia.
Well, I'm talking about line 8 specifically. If you look across, and we know that October through February was pretty much actuals, and Markeisha, please correct me if I'm wrong. To me, the coming months look realistic if we continue to, at a minimum, do what we've been doing year to date. We obviously need to do more, but I think it would be, we need to do more. I think everyone there knows that just because these numbers are what they are doesn't mean that we don't need to exceed them, as is the fact that there's a deficit budget. I think that they are very well that probably aware that other units have deficit budgets, and when you add up deficits and deficits and deficits, somewhere has to make up the difference. So this will be our third budget that's in a deficit this year, I think. So I mean, I feel like it's achievable.
Julia, this is our second budget. This is our third budget that we're reviewing. So it's our second budget that's in deficit, I think. I don't think the affiliates were in deficit.
No.
WBAI was.
Well, we haven't reviewed KPFK, but we all know that that is.
Yes, that's okay. Fair point.
So, and Julia,
would you say something about? I'm sorry. You go ahead.
I mean, they're not having dance parties and going to lunch just with the staff. There's not a lot of just blowing money on expenses, so there's not a lot to cut there is the issue. So, and we all know that, there's just a limit to what you can cut, and they're already cut to the bone with staffing. I think they have one on staff, board operator or programmer. I can't remember. I apologize what his
job is. Board operator.
Yeah, there just aren't a lot of people on the staff there.
We have a board operator, a general manager, a business manager, and what else? Markeisha?
One contractor that helps in membership and development, yeah.
That's
right.
More or less a consultant.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't think that their contractor situation is not like some of the other units where they have a lot of contractors. So.
Right. Julia, could you give us a general, for the people who are listening and can't look at the budget, can you just give us a general outline of what this deficit that we're talking about is, how big it is in relation to the total budget? Well, that's enough.
Well, the deficit is right at, let me scroll back up to get my specific numbers. It's $192,000. So, total revenue is $490,000 with total expenses $683,000. That's a decent chunk. One thing that I can say is when I look back to prior year, if you take the PPP funds out of the conversation from last year, because that was a one-off situation,
right.
The budgeted revenue for fiscal year 22 is it's not quite $60,000 less than what we're showing as actual for fiscal year 21. Again, that's not included. I had backed out the PPP because I was trying to, compare apples to apples, sort of like Chris was saying earlier.
Right.
So, and I think that that's been a decline that has been happening, over a few years. But I think that puts you in more perspective of, we had a loss last year. If we back out the PPP fund revenue that was received last year, their loss would have been $154,000. So we're, that kind of tells you where we are in comparison to last year. They have decreased expenses. Expenses are $62,000 less. Operating expenses are $62,000 less than they were prior to the prior year. Most of that, I believe, and please correct me if I'm wrong, a chunk of that's in personnel costs and some of the administrative costs. But it's another year of challenging times. So again, this isn't like this loss is some big shock versus last year. If they had not had the PPP funds, they would have experienced right now, we're thinking about $154,000 loss.
And that's a good point to let sink in. It's a difference of what, about $40,000?
Mm-hmm.
Give or take.
Now, keep in mind, we're accrual based, so we're including that central services that we're talking about.
That's
so,
right.
So, again, that's a paper transaction there when you know, they're in a financial situation that they have not been able to pay that this year. They did make some payments last year, a good number of payments last year. At least my spreadsheet is indicating that there were some payments last year. So, you know, if you back the central services out that are, have not been paid and try to look at sort of force this into a cash type statement or cash budget,
right?
You know, it's not as horrible, but and I don't mean to say horrible. I know that it's hard to work at a station where somebody is saying that your situation is horrible. So I empathize with the situation that they're in.
No, I understand that 100%. If you back out the past due central services, WBAI currently doesn't look so bad, but when you add the central services, it is. And of course, the central services are necessary for the organization.
Correct.
So
we can't set the standard that those aren't going to be paid. And
right.
That's where we really got to do some work is to.
Right. May I ask you a specific question? The last change that you made, I think, actually was this afternoon, was it about the May revenue? And did you back out that? Did you take it down from, what was it, 82 or 80, 86, 83 or 86,000? Pardon me?
I think it was 83. I believe it was 83,000.
And we dropped that down. We did drop that down.
We took a straight 40,000 off.
And is that still result in a deficit of the deficit that you stated?
Yes. And James, the number that I was using when we talked yesterday or whenever we talked, I was looking at her original budget, and so I was off. I had overstated the deficit when I first talked.
I'm glad to hear it. May you be off like that in the future more.
Yeah.
That's good.
It was not 240,000. So
okay.
She had already included the cut in February by putting the actuals for February.
Good to know. All right, we've been having a little colloquy here. I want to go back to opening it up to any questions from any of the members.
Chris for the stack.
Or Paul for stack.
Let me take a stack. We have Chris, our Paul, anyone else? I'll put myself on, but I'll bow to anyone who wants to come in after our Paul. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay. Let's see. First of all, I realize that you don't have access to this, so there's no point in accounting for it in the budget, at least for the moment. But if we use the 15% rule, the central services for KPFT would drop by about another 40,000, which I think drives the deficit down to, or maybe it's 60,000. It comes out to 82,000 for the year, drives the deficit down to 133, which is still a significant deficit considering that the revenues are only expected to come in at 500,000. I noticed that, and that wasn't a question, it was just a statement. My question is regarding the realisticness, if there is such a word, of the three expense categories, administrative, programming, and development. So you're showing a net decline over last year of 19% for administrative, 10% for programming, and 20% for development. Now, admittedly, development and programming are areas that you have more flexibility in than administrative expenses, probably. And yet you're showing a 20% reduction in administrative expenses. I'm wondering how exactly you planned on saving $25,000 over last year in terms of administration. Thank you.
This is Marquisha. So part of the reason that there's a decline there is because we are not having to pay expenses of being in a building. So even though we weren't in the building for 2 years, there's still things that we had to maintain. We had to maintain the lights, the gas, the water, trash services, certain things they would not let us kill without
not owning, without not actually owning the building. We also made significant decreases in our phone lines. Of course, we did do the phone line decrease. We got rid of all of our landlines and went to Zoom phone, and that saved us about $1,500, almost $2,000 a month, I think, because now we're paying only about $225 a month, $250. So there's a big savings there. We had got rid of a lot of our internet services we had. We had, and it's more of a technical thing because I don't know what they were all doing, but I know there needed to be internet in the building, internet at the transmitters, and they needed to be talking to each other. There needed to be backup. So we cut a lot of that as well. So that's where the savings has come in administrative expenses. Now, of course, once we eventually go back into a building, some of that stuff will come back, but then hopefully the revenue will come back as well. But right now, that's the reason why the administrative expenses are down.
Okay,
thank you.
That's very
thank
sensible.
You.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Markeisha. Chris, were you done?
Yeah, I like I say, there's similar reductions in programming and development, but I'm assuming that those fall along similar lines without the physical building, you know, the personnel needs, et cetera, are going to follow along with that. So I think I got it, and I think I got the basic idea. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. R. Paul.
Yes. Something which you've just said and something you said earlier regarding CPB funding. Now, there's a minimum number of workers who are required to be at a station to make it qualify for funding, and I don't know that consultants count for that. And I also don't know if management counts as workers for CPB. Maybe they do, but it sounded like you have 4 people, not counting a consultant, and I'm wondering if that could be a problem for qualifying for CPB money.
So we have 3 employees plus the consultant, so a total of 4, and I think you're right about that because I think we're supposed to have at least 5 full-time employees.
Yeah, I think so. All right, so
well,
people
we can't
know about
hire
it. Thank
anybody
you.
Without the money, so yeah.
Yeah, it's catch 22.
Right.
Okay, you're done, R. Paul?
Yes.
Okay, now I guess I'm next. And I was thinking 2.5 employees, but I guess that's only when you're a repeater station. So that's different. Thank you for that clarification, R. Paul and Markeisha. And I was wondering if the reduction in administrative expenses, did that have anything to do with the fact, I guess, Robert, you've been there for a number of months. Was the reduction in this year's budget for administrative expenses, does that at all reflect the fact that for, a brief period, there was no GM? Is that reflected in the reduced administrative costs for this budget, or was that last year?
That would be last year. And that doesn't necessarily fall on administrative. That just under the salaries and related. So.
Okay. When did Robert you come on?
August.
Ah, yes. Okay. Definitely last year. Thank you for that. Any other questions? Hearing none, I'm going to ask Julia specifically, do you have anything else you wanted to point out or discuss? I know you spent a lot of time on this. Any stories, any war stories you want to share or any observations?
No. I mean, I think we've pretty much stated the obvious.
Okay. I'm going to put myself on the stack and just ask a question that's already been touched on and perhaps answered, but I just want to ask Markeisha and Robert, but maybe Robert mostly, what's the effect of not being able to do live broadcasting? We have it's my understanding that not being able to do live broadcasting is very detrimental to your fundraising abilities, but do you have any particular comments or anything you can help us understand what's going on there without the ability to do live broadcasting? And in a, well, I'll ask you the follow-up question after you do that.
Sure. I've worked in community radio in Colorado, Iowa, Nebraska, Illinois, and several other places. And nothing replaces having the physical building, the ability to have people come from the community to come in and see radio and to experience radio. That is a dynamic that until now I had never experienced. So it is really putting back, chilling, stifling creativity of the programmer, potentially not having a visual for the community to kind of see and relate to. Community, it takes the community out of community radio. And so having that particular building, even though the old building, I had people call me up today saying, well, I'm going to come out to see your building. Like, well, we're no longer there. That building is so much a part of the community. It's the true essence of community radio. So it's very, very difficult to resurrect the energy from a home studio that you would otherwise have in a facility, a studio, a building. So it's really challenging, and it's probably holding back to some extent the spontaneity of the programmer who is delivering that vivacious type of statement to his listeners, and having listeners come to the station and drop off their particular contributions. It's a huge impediment, and our programmers have really, really done the very best that they can do under these very, very limiting circumstances. So it's challenging in every aspect of the organization of a broadcast station, in particular a community radio station that endears itself to its community, especially, you know, a Pacifica station. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I'm going to ask my follow-up now, which is a little bit of history. WBAI adapted very quickly to the necessity for remote broadcasting, and we offered to go to Texas if necessary, even during the pandemic. Not that it's over. I didn't mean to say that in the past tense. But to help establish, you know, through Lucy Light and other modalities, to get live broadcasting back on the air at KPFT. And the offer was not picked up. And I don't expect you to know about that or to answer for that. But I'm just wondering, what are the plans now to try and get some kind of a live broadcast operation going, even without a station? I mean, I remember Mario Maria, one of our prior program directors, once said at a meeting that the, you know, the Sandinistas did radio from the back of a truck. If they can do it, we can do it. You know, yeah, well, maybe, but maybe not. But so the question, and in the jungle, I guess, by the way. But so my question is, what plans do you have to establish live broadcasting? And is there anything the rest of the network could do to help you with that, which I think I know there is, but has anyone made you aware of that?
I've been made aware of that. As I said a few minutes ago regarding some of our events that we will initiate at venues outside in the community, that will be our stepping toward doing, you know, live events where we are actually live and the public can actually physically see a programmer playing music. So that's going to be one of the live micro events that I referred to earlier. Also, please understand that the equipment that is required to do some of the, I just would call it remote broadcasting, is I don't know how much of that particular equipment is operable. And there is still a digital divide among some of the programmers. Some programmers have access to, you know, laptops and so forth, and others don't. A majority of the programmers don't. So we have embarked upon, through a couple of successful grants, purchasing equipment so that we'll be able to go out and do some of these live events that are to be scheduled. Thank you.